Welcome back to Karacast, the podcast from Carasoft, the trusted government IT solutions provider. Subscribe to get the latest technology updates in the public sector. I'm Corey Baumgartner, your host from the Carasoft production team. On behalf of Trend Micro, we would like to welcome you to today's podcast focused around third-party risk management for federal agencies. Frederick Cook from August Shell, Stacy Bostronik, Director of DIB Operations, John Boynes, NIST Deputy Chief of the Computer Security Division, and Matt Travis from the Cyber AB will discuss third-party risk management for federal agencies.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Freddie Cook. I'm the Director of Risk Management Programs for August Shell. I'm going to let the panel introduce themselves, and then we'll start with the discussion. We'll start with Stacy.
I'm Stacy Bostronik. I'm from the DoD CIO, and I'm the Chief of the DIB Cybersecurity Program.
John Boynes, I'm Deputy Chief of the Computer Security Division, and our program lead for cybersecurity supply chain risk management. Have been working in this space for roughly 13 years, and recall back in 2012 at RSA when they said supply chain is the new black. I guess it's still black. We haven't solved that problem yet.
Good afternoon. Matt Travis, I'm the CEO of the Cyber AB, which is the CMMC accreditation body. CMMC being the Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification Initiative. So we are a 501c3 non-governmental entity that is the exclusive partner of Ms. Bostronik and her team to help implement, oversee the CMMC ecosystem. So I assume we'll have some CMMC discussion as part of what really is, I think, a trailblazing risk management approach. And prior to me being at the Cyber AB, I was the Deputy Director at CISA.
Awesome. So my first question is for Stacy, because I know she has to deal with this on a regular basis, that it's really hard to get people excited about third-party risk management. How has that been in the CIO organization, getting people moving and getting things done?
An uphill battle. So I think, you know, there's a recognition across industry that we've got concerns and we've got issues, right? Our data, we have to protect to make sure we maintain our superiority. What we have in our supply chain as far as who we're partnering with and how we're working with people within our supply chain is of concern, as well as who is backing some of these innovative small companies, where they're getting their funding and how they are being financially uplifted to do the business with us. You know, we find that some of our small innovative companies end up getting their funding from our adversaries, which is a problem. So we definitely have a recognition of the issue. We just have to come together as a nation to work through the problem.
Thank you. And John, in terms of defining the problem and prescribing the solutions for the problem, how is NIST going about that?
So I'll say that NIST takes a fairly holistic view of supply chain risk management. It's not just adversarial based. Supply chains have been around for roughly centuries, if not much, much longer. Supply chain risk management has really come into being in the mid-90s, right? So companies know how to manage their supply chains. What's new is the security aspects to it. And that's kind of what we're dealing with now. It's the security of the products and services that run through the supply chains. It's security of the supply chains. The difficulty that I have both internally at NIST, internally within the government, is that a lot of the folks that are dealing with this issue are looking at it from a traditional information security perspective. And they think a lot of the mitigations and solutions can be supply chain considerations. And I don't even really know what that means. But what I think part of the solution is it's that Venn diagram and the nexus between the two of looking at it from traditional information security and traditional supply chain risk management. We're still very nascent in the area, and we're muddling along, but at least we're still moving forward.
Yeah, and Matt, let us know what Cyber AB is doing for the Department of Defense to help us in this situation.
Sure. So CMMC is, I believe, the most ambitious cybersecurity conformity initiative ever attempted when you think about the scale and size of the defense industrial base and what DOD, again, I usually say this right up front, nothing I say here should be construed as representing the Department of Defense. We are their partner, but again, an independent organization. But it really is attempting to manage that risk for an industry-wide perspective. And so what the CyberAB does, and we'll be doing when CMMC actually launches, it is currently still in federal rulemaking, is that we are the entity that accredits those third-party assessment organizations that any defense contractor within the DIB is going to need to hire to assess whether or not they have attained the standard set by NIST 800-171. So we have a lot of responsibilities to make sure that those third-party assessment organizations have qualified personnel, perform their assessments under ISO standards. We adjudicate conflict of interest and ethics complaints, those kind of things. We've got a sister organization that certifies and trains or oversees the training of the individual assessors. So there really is a whole ecosystem with regard to CMMC, because it's not just, it's not an inspection regime, it's an assessment regime that requires the full participation of industry. So when you think about all the different roles in CMMC, you need instructors to teach those assessors so they can take the certification exams to be assessors who can then go work for those third-party assessment organizations, those C3PAOs. And you also need all the practitioners who have some baseline degree of knowledge who are going to help those defense contractors actually implement NIST 800-171 and get them ready for their assessments. And then to go even further, we've got companies publishing and training partners who actually publish CMMC curricula for those assessor candidates, as well as the training entities who hold the CMMC classes. So it really is true ecosystem. We sit on top of that at the pleasure of the department to help them manage all that interaction.
Now, third-party risk management or supply chain risk management is kind of easy for companies, but it's not as easy for the federal government. It's not always popular to say, well, we're not going to buy this product because it's funded or it's made by this country. Stacey, how are we working with that?
So there have been several initiatives of late with the 889. How many of you are familiar with Section 889? Come on, guys. Really? Are you guys sleeping over there, or did you hear me? Section 889?
More coffee?
Come on. Right? So during the previous administration, there was an initiative that came out where we have banned products from Huawei, ZTE, Hikvision, and for telecommunications capabilities. I think in the future you will probably see that increase. There has been released a new clause, the 252-204-7024 clause. I think it's 204-7024, where now there is a new rating that inspurs for your supply chain risk that will be used in best value determinations. Now, does that mean that your cyber is coming into play as much as it will when CMMC goes into effect? No, but it will be a factor that can be utilized and analyzed as far as a best value determination. So I think across the board, the government is starting to try to find ways to evaluate supply chain risk. The Logistics and Sustainment in the acquisition group at OSD has put together a framework, so we can all as a department start moving in the same direction that what we agree upon is considered risky. So, you know, there are several different areas that are coming to pass to make sure that we are securing our supply chain from those different adversarial threats.
And John, is NIST in any of the new publications going to speak toward actual adversaries and the level of risk associated?
Sure. So, I mean, I'll give a head nod. About a year ago, we released an update to our foundational publication, special publication 800-161 revision 1, which has all sorts of good stuff in it. Not going to go into detail with that, but I'll follow on Stacey a little bit with saying that the government is unique in terms of we are an end user of products and services. A lot of that risk in supply chains gets passed on and transitions up the supply chain, and we're the ultimate ones who hold it. Now, a lot of critical infrastructure owners and operators are in the same situation. So we're also working in that regard. But as a federal government, right, at least we operate off of acquisition with DFARS and FARS, right? The Federal Acquisition Regulations, the defense FARS. And at least for the FARS, our acquisition system has largely been based off of a lot of political and economic, how can we get money out to certain groups, right? Small and medium-sized businesses, women-owned business, veteran-owned. But it really hasn't addressed the security issues into the last couple of years. So back in 2018, following on a two-year effort that started off with the Kaspersky Laboratories binding operational directive, 2 years of pure hell for the inside the federal government because we had no process to dealing with excluding a company and removing those products. So lessons learned, we kind of submitted a proposal into Congress, legislation, and thus was born the Federal Acquisition Supply Chain Security Act, part of the secure technology legislation. And also born from that was the Federal Acquisition Security Council with the charge of both exclusion and removal orders writ large throughout the IC, DOD, and the .gov communities. But what a lot of folks don't know is it's also in charge of harmonizing and making consistent the different supply chain risk management practices throughout the different departments and agencies. So that's kind of our mission that has grown over the last 5 or 6 years. Again, we're still kind of muddling through this, but we need to get it right because there's a lot of legal aspects to this. So we have to have our ducks in a row before we go out and start with the first exclusion and removal orders.
So just legal or political as well?
There's always a political element. So from a NIST perspective, we are trying to set up a deliberative process that is risk-based so that when we do these risk assessments of products, it is a risk-based process where the politics aren't necessarily involved, but the risks are. And those can be geopolitical risks, but those are only one risk factor out of many.
Hey, Freddie, I'll just touch on that because I was at CISA when that binding operational directive banning Kaspersky from federal networks was issued. And we looked at our risk management lens. You know, we asked ourselves a number of questions because the software itself, if many of you probably use Kaspersky, is perfectly fine software. But when you look at the fact that most any software right can be compromised, but more to the point, where is the company's ties to? Does it have operations in an authoritarian regime where there's not respect for intellectual property, where there's not an independent judiciary, where the state can compel the surrender or the sharing of data from companies operating in that? Those were really the risk factors that we looked at in issuing that binding operational directive. And I think people often think of, the risk, what's the technical risk of the actual software? It goes much broader than that. And I think what DoD is looking to do with CMMC is to more closely manage all of those factors by at least ensuring that if nothing else, those companies that are entrusted with handling controlled and classified information or federal contract information, that's what CMMC is designed to protect, have to meet a minimum standard. And it really is looking through it at with a risk management lens.
Now, a lot of organizations right now, especially from a cybersecurity perspective, are trying to push out the latest tools and technologies, the really exciting stuff. So Stacy, when there is a question of how that technology came about, where it was developed from, all these things, how does that work in terms of the organization who says, I just want to buy the thing?
Well, so from the perspective of a DoD agency that just wants to buy the thing, mm-hmm. that's wonderful, except for the fact that you've got a lot of things that are coming back to get us in the end, mm-hmm. right? Why do you think that they came out with the 14028 executive order on software and where it was developed and how it was managed and who it's been exposed to? Because until you do the risk analysis on the companies that you're doing business with, the software that you're using, you're not going to know that there's a backdoor put in that software or that company's actually owned by or does business in a country that forces them to provide the data that transits through their spaces to them. right? And so we have been a bit unwitting in our compliance with other nations' laws that have put us at a disadvantage and a risk. We have got to get on top of this. We've got to make sure that we are securing ourselves and our data and our information. And, you know, this is where I kind of get on my soapbox, and I don't know how many of you have heard me speak. You guys over there to the right, I want to see some hands. Come on. You guys aren't sleeping over there, right? I worked at Naval Air Systems Command when they were developing the Joint Strike Fighter, right? I knew some of those engineers that were staying up for 24 hours trying to figure out why the heck they couldn't get that aircraft off the deck of a carrier because the wings were too heavy, right? How much time and money and effort did we as a nation and a taxpayer spend to develop that aircraft to be the premier aircraft to give our men and women in uniform the advantage? And what happened? In 10 minutes, somebody comes in, steals the entire tech data package, and now there's one that looks just like it in China. All the way to the fact that they copied the same flaw we have in the cockpit. They didn't even fix anything, right? So at the end of the day, the thing that you've got to think about is my son or daughter that's going to be in that cockpit now, and not to say my kids aren't bright, but they're going to have to depend on their capability to outmaneuver that Chinese aircraft. And I, as a mom, do not want to have to only rest on that. That's going to keep me up at night, right? Because if my kid gets distracted for 5 minutes, he's done. We have got to be on top of this, people. We've got to be making sure that our software that we're using hasn't been exposed and doesn't have a back door to let the adversary come in and steal our hard work and our blood, sweat, and tears in 2 minutes. We have got to make sure that the companies that we're doing business with are solid U.S. proponent companies that aren't giving our data and passing it on to the countries that they're doing business with. We have to make sure that the people that we're doing business with, that we secure them and make sure that they have the trusted capital to be able to move forward and be profitable and not have to depend on our adversaries coming in and giving them money. I mean, do you guys understand how much I think the Chinese have bought $220 billion worth of our land here in the United States. Just think about that for a minute, right? They're buying up our farmland. What happens when we get cut off and we can no longer farm because they own it all and they're like, sorry for your luck. We're not going to let you plant anything here. We've got to get on top of this. We have got to be ahead of it. We've got to make sure that we secure this because otherwise our kids are sitting ducks.
Thanks for listening, and thank you to our guests, Frederick Cook, Stacey Bostronik, John Boynes, and Matt Travis. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe to Caracast, and be sure to listen to our other discussions. If you'd like more information on how Juniper Networks can assist your organization, please visit www.carasoft.com or email us at rsamarketing@carasoft.com. Thanks again for listening, and have a great day.